Good morning. My name is Wilhelm, and this is the 22nd episode of the Nognodos podcast, and the 10th episode if you're following the track in English. With me today, I have Kyle from Korea. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. As you said, my name is Kyle, and I'm 28. I'm living, working, and studying here in South Korea. I'm actually Canadian, but I've been here for several years, and I've been getting into the scene a little bit more each time, every year, and I've been working on and developing a game for teaching the Korean language to foreign people, English-speaking in particular.
Right. Welcome to the show, and let's get started. So, Kyle, what have you been playing lately?
Well, lately we've been playing, my group and I anyway, my friend has been running a game of Axe. It's called Adventure Conquer King. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
It's an old school-ish thingy, right?
One of those retro clone type things where... It's basically the same rules from like the older first red box edition or whatever, but with a lot more detail and crunch, especially for like the economic side of things or, hiring people or starting to build a castle and what that entails and the costs of it and such.
So it's sort of a SimCity and a role playing game at the same time.
Yeah, like there's a lot more rules for the nitty-gritty of the treasure part of the killing monsters and taking their treasure.
Sounds cool.
So we've been playing that, and before that, I don't know if you've heard of it, but I think it was a little bit controversial. I saw some posts on it on RPG.net, but of Cthulhu Tech.
Yes, I have played in a short campaign of Cthulhu Tech. It sort of faded away after a while. The game master thought that the mecha battles were the cool things, and all the players thought that, well, hanging around at the base, going partying and so on, that was the fun bits. So
there's a clash. Yeah, we had a lot of fun with it. I actually didn't. I was the one running the game in that case, and I didn't use the mecha type rules all that much. Like for me as well, it was more of exploring the idea of the setting and such.
But the book is quite lovely. All the illustrations and so on. I really love that book, so I keep it. Even if I really didn't like the rules, I thought the setting was okay. But I really love the illustrations in that book.
Oh, yeah, it's just great. The illustrations along with just the layout and how it's written and such is very evocative. Like, it makes you want to jump into the setting and get something going right away as soon as you see it.
I understand that you have written a game.
I have, yes.
Did you get to play that any in the recently?
Oh, yes. I've been playtesting that quite a bit, actually. It's been a different experience because it wasn't something that I wanted to take to my regular group right away before it was a little bit more polished. So it was, I did a lot of the playtesting with family members, and a lot of my family members have never played an RPG at all. So it was a new experience for them just playing a game, a role-playing game in general, and even more of a different experience because it's not very traditional in the sense that there's like dice or the traditional GM who takes care of everything. So it was a bit of a challenge, but because of that, I think it's definitely changed and grown and made me think about a lot of things that I wouldn't normally have thought about.
Well, if they haven't played much games before, then they have no preconceptions of how it should be played either, so...
That's true, yeah. But they just found the idea of role-playing at a table just to be very, I don't know if I'd say odd, but it was definitely a big change for them, right? Like, they played some board games, and they played some cooperative games or competitive stuff, but nothing that requires you to take on the role of a different character or someone other than yourself. Yeah, the game is called Magicians, and it's a game that I designed specifically to help, if not teach, but to motivate and facilitate the language, the learning of a language. And in this case, I've written it for Korean, but my main goal was to get it out there so that people could actually adapt it and use it for other languages as well. Like, I've got plans to do it for other languages like French, German, and Japanese, but that's all in the future, of course. Right now I'm working on the Korean because it's one of the languages that I'm most strong in and be able to actually teach effectively.
The Magicians, and it's based on Lev Grossman's books, right?
Yeah, it's more like when I first started writing it, I wanted, the whole idea was to be based specifically on the book. Like, the setting is from the book and based on his IP, his intellectual property. And in the beginning, he was very, Mr. Grossman, that is, he was very excited about the idea and he wanted to get in on it as well. But he actually ended up selling his IP rights to the game to Hollywood because they're making a TV show. I think it's being written by the people who did X-Men First Class. So it would have turned into this big deal, apparently. And right now I have it so the setting is basically detailed by the characters at the start of a session just by asking some questions about what they're doing. Like, the assumption is that they're students at a school learning magic together, and the details of it, like if they wanted to play more of a Harry Potter style or a magician style or whatever they wanted to do, would be more fleshed out in the beginning. Before making characters.
Now that you talk about it, I think that is actually a better way to go for beginners than to have to base the game on a predefined setting, because then everyone knows the same amount and has the same knowledge about the setting, so it doesn't become an obstacle for them to enjoy the game or to dare to say or to speak or such things. If they were with you from the beginning and they invented the tower and the strange games that they play and everything, then they are part of it and they know it just as much as everyone else, that they have ownership in the setting already.
Yeah, I think getting that initial investment is a big part of the games that I play these days. Even when I decide to play a game like Dungeons & Dragons or something, we usually like to include some kind of rule where the players will get narrative control or will be able to add things to the world, create some investment at some point in it, because it really creates that feeling that you want to have when you're playing a role-playing game, of being immersed and that kind of thing.
Would you like to go into a little more detail on how this game relates to language learning, language teaching, because it's part role-playing game, but also a teaching tool, right?
Yeah, it's designed to be, for sure. A big challenge I had, like, I've had this idea to make a game for a long time, mostly for teaching a player skill in the game. Like, the resolution mechanics would be based on the player building up a skill in something, and I wanted that skill to be language learning. But I didn't really know how to go about it without having someone there who was GMing or facilitating the game who was fluent in the language. And obviously that's the best way to go about it. But with technology the way it is now, with iOS 6 coming out and with free applications on phones, smartphones like Dragon Dictation and such, I decided that there could be some impartial moderator, I suppose you could call it, via technology. So if you wanted to know if your pronunciation was correct and such, you would use the phone's application, and you would speak into it. And if your pronunciation was correct, you'd be able to know right away because it would display on the phone. So with that idea in mind, I created the system. There's three systems in it now, and the basic system is just an archetypal type where there are nouns that represent anything in the world, basically, like you would use like object or a living thing or one of the elements like fire or such, and then you would put a verb on the end of that as well. So like remove or destroy or create or something like that. And with those two, with a noun and a verb, you would essentially create a spell. And then when you cast that spell, you would speak the two words into the Dragon Dictation app. And then if you were correct in your pronunciation, it should show up correctly, and that would mean a successful casting. Step two would be, instead of having that archetypal type system, where having a word represents an entire category of nouns, you would have that fluctuation. So depending on the situation, you would have to be specific. So if you wanted to cast a spell on a table, you would have to say the noun, you would have to use table. And if you wanted to destroy it or cast a spell on it or make it larger or what have you, you would use the appropriate verb or grammar pattern. And then the third one is just taking all that and making it into a sentence. So by the end of it, hopefully you've learned some pronunciation, built some vocabulary, and then have taken that system and learned some grammar from it as well.
So this game is geared towards people who are in the very early steps of learning a new language.
Yes, absolutely. The assumption going into it is that they have little to no experience with the language, and it does require pronunciation, obviously, when you're casting a spell. So having experience in the language is obviously helpful.
Do you have a mechanism to that if the machine misunderstands you, you get this hilarious mishap or fumble?
Well, the way I have it right now is more of the story games or burning wheel type system, where if failure is just results in a unforeseen consequence, which would be determined by whoever is GMing that turn. So if they're casting a spell and they failed, it wouldn't necessarily mean they failed the spell, but it would introduce a complication, like perhaps a monster or something to fight, or maybe they got in trouble with their teacher, or just some kind of consequence. But obviously it could just simply be a failed spell, or the spell changing or taking on a life of its own or being corrupted or what have you.
I studied German previously when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And my teacher, he liked to run what he called role-playing games in class, and they were basically pair exercises where, well you are the salesman and you are the customer and you want to
you want
to buy a boot or whatever.
Yeah.
And he had found that if the players engaged with their characters, that is, they went in character, sort of. They spoke more freely, and they were not as afraid of making mistakes as they were when, if he asked them, what would you say to buy a boot? And they would like stutter and fumble, and they didn't dare to give an answer because they were afraid that it would be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were in character, and the character was sort of a bit crazy or witty or whatever, some strengths that made them a distance from themselves, they were not afraid to make mistakes because it weren't they who made the mistakes, but the character made the mistakes. But they still learned from the speaking and gaming.
It makes sense, yeah. My hope is that by having that experience, by having the whole magical system tied to the language learning, that people will be excited to learn the language more, right? So in that way, it would be a motivational and facilitated, because the more spells you want to cast or the better you want to be at it, the more you will have to learn the language yourself. So you'll have, in a way, you might have even more of a tie to your character than in other games, right? Because it's directly translatable. Your player skill is your character skill in the game as well. So there's that direct translation.
I know that there are people who think that the players should not have advantage of real-world skills in the game because it breaks the game and so on. But I've, but for this very purpose, for the explicit purpose of actually teaching the skill, I think it's perfectly valid and a good idea.
I hope so. That's the goal of it. I can understand where people's hesitation comes from too. Like, the same goes for me. Like, if I'm playing some kind of suave criminal or something, or somebody who's a fast talker and who wants to be like a face man of the group, but if I'm just not particularly eloquent or very good at speaking, I just wouldn't be able to do it in a normal game, right? I'd have to have some mechanic that would offset that in the game. So even though I'm speaking poorly in person, if I rolled a good roll or if I did something mechanically, I would be able to portray, the character would be portrayed differently than I'm portraying him in the game. Like, and I think a lot of people want that, right? Like, if I'm going to play a fighter, I shouldn't have to be able to swing a sword around or something, right? That's the reason we play role-playing games.
Do you have any thoughts for how the game would develop once the students have come to that level of skill in the language that they can cast all their spells? Do you have plans for how to proceed and use the game for more highly skilled students? Or should they move on to different exercises then?
Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. The way I have it right now for what I'm calling the master system in the book is they would have to form complete sentences, and by that time they should know a fair amount of grammar, like in terms of particles in the Korean language to show this is a subject, this is a verb, etc. And then I've also have it so that certain kinds of spells require different patterns as well. So if they wanted to cast an illusion, it would just be a simple sentence. But if they wanted to cast something with a more direct or damaging effect, or, for example, if they want to do healing magic, they have to pray in the setting. So they have to ask for things. So they would use this grammar pattern. In Korean, it would be like, hey, Juseo, which means, like, do it for me, or asking for something in general. So by casting that type of spell, they're learning that type of pattern. So I can see that if they wanted to learn more patterns, that we might be able to, as a community as well, come up with certain spells that would be required for different patterns. And they would obviously also be able to take their studies, advance their studies on their own as well. Hopefully at that point they've established a desire or motivation to learn the language more.
I've been thinking a bit about role-playing and learning languages myself lately.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As you would know, I'm not a native speaker of English. It's a second language to me. And just a year or two ago, we got an American woman in our group. And she speaks some Swedish, but not enough for actual gaming. So we started playing games in English.
Oh.
And I found that by doing this, since that started, my spoken English has improved so much. I'm 35 years old, and I was pretty good at English in school. I had good grades for English and so on. But recently, my spoken English has improved vastly over what it was before, just by meeting every couple of weeks and playing a game.
Oh, man. I think it's something that is that you see often. If the learning of a language really requires that interest, that motivation in it, so that's the real thing I'm trying to create behind it. If I can get students interested in it, then even when they're not playing at the table, maybe they'll be studying by themselves, right? And I can release material through my website so they can practice. And obviously the game book will be tied more into things you do in the game. But if I can put material online that they may use for real-world situations, like if they wanted to buy a boot, like you said. Does she learn Swedish by playing Swedish games with you? Or is she more interested in just the role-playing experience?
I think she will be doing that once she gets a little better at Swedish. Right now we speak Swedish during the breaks and English in-game.
Okay. Have you noticed her getting better as well?
Yes, I don't know how much that is due to the... due to the games, though, because she lives exposed to the Swedish language all the time, because they speak it at work, and she can speak it at home and everywhere. So she gets exposed to Swedish much more than I get exposed to speaking English.
Absolutely.
Of course, I read the internet, I watch movies and so on, but that is, I only consume the language, I don't produce it. It's a different thing.
It's very different, yeah. I've seen a lot of threads on RPG.net or Story Games, and a lot of people talk about wanting to learn a language so that they can play a foreign RPG game, like a German one or Japanese or what have you. And I always thought to myself, like, if you have that much of a desire to learn a language just to play a role-playing game, then what if there was a role-playing game that lets you learn the language? It just seemed like such a good tie-in. And I think that's where it really started gelling for me.
Yes, because if you're playing a game, you get sort of a payoff right away. I would like to know how to speak French, but I don't want to make the investment of getting there. I don't want to learn French. I want to know how to speak French, because I see the goal is reading untranslated works of Alexandre Dumas that haven't been translated into English. So the only way to read them would be to read them in French. But to get there, it's quite a lot of work before I can read those books.
Absolutely.
And by doing it the way you're doing, but you get payoff when you know two words, one verb and one noun, you can actually use the language. I think that's very cool.
You see the benefits of it in game right away. So it's definitely different, right? Like, if you're learning by yourself, you're kind of slogging away, and maybe you'll figure out a sentence or something, or you'll be translating it, and it doesn't feel exciting or new or dangerous, and you don't have a collective atmosphere either, right? Like, another thing I wanted to have for people learning a language is that atmosphere of a bunch of people with a like mind, right, with the same goal. Like, they know they're playing a RPG, but the RPG is expressly for language learning, so they have that common goal. So they'll be helping each other, and they'll be talking about it, hopefully, when they're not at the game. And there will be that motivation, I hope.
You mentioned threads on RPG.net where people wanted to learn languages in order to access game material written in that language. Now you're writing a game for teaching Korean. Is there any Korean materials that would interest the outside world if they only could access it? What do the Koreans play?
That is... well, The Korean RPG scene is probably the smallest you'll see in a lot of countries, because it's just not a concept that's easily introduced, I suppose. Like, in Korean society, the importance of age and separation between, in a societal structure is very important. So, these days, like, it's starting to change, and I think Korea is famous for RPGs, just tabletop RPGs. Everyone knows, like, oh, the Koreans are all about StarCraft and online games, so they're very competitive and such. And I think the reason that tabletop RPGs is not quite as popular here is because of how popular the computer ones are. And because from such an early period, like long before America and Canada had fast internet, Korea was already like blazing. So it was something they developed early on. But there is a community, and they do play RPGs. Unfortunately, the only RPG book that is published in Korea is GURPS. And so a lot of Korean people just take that system. Obviously, there's a lot of GURPS books, but they take that system and they kind of tailor it to what they want to play. But there are some very cool Korean RPGs. After searching for it yesterday, actually, when I found out I was going to be on here, I figured I should probably figure out exactly where these RPGs came from. There's one called 가라앉을 때까지, which means until we sink. And when I found it, it turned out to be not a Korean game at all. Pardon?
It's Norwegian.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all. Like, the first time I had seen this game was in Korea. So I don't know. It was very unique, and I thought it was Korean, and I was very impressed by this. So I was a little bit disappointed to learn that it wasn't Korean. And there was another game, too, called, in Korean, it's called 내가 안 그랬어, which is like saying, I didn't do it, or some. I think it's also a Norwegian game. The Norwegian game, I think, is called It Wasn't Me. Do you know that?
No, I don't know that one.
That one is the characters are on an island that is isolated, and there's a murder that takes place, and they... Oh, no, sorry, wait. I'm mixing two games.
Yes, that sounds like Until We Sink.
Until We Sink, yeah. But 내가 그래서 I Didn't Do It one is a game which is also Norwegian, I think, and there's also a murder, but people are trying to convince each other that they were not the murderer. And when someone's explaining something, you can say, like, oh, that's a lie. And then they have to defend themselves, and there's five rounds of play, I believe, and the first round you determine, like, the motive. I'm not sure exactly what, in which round you do which things, but in one you'll determine, like, the motivation or the murder weapon and where the murder happened and such, and at the end of it you all vote on who was the most suspicious, and it's not really known until the end, but I'm pretty sure that is also a Norwegian game. So I was a little bit disappointed with that as well. But I did find two Korean RPGs that are definitely Korean, and they've been around for a long time, like since the 90s, I believe. A more recent one is called Chokjeon, which means to face your enemy, to be in front of your enemy, like a confrontation kind of thing. And it's actually about the Joseon area, the Joseon dynasty in Korea. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Executive Decision by Greg Stoltz.
No, I haven't heard of that.
It came out a while ago, I think 2003 or so. And it's just about political debate. And the goal of the game is just to have strife, basically. Like, the GM, you're supposed to, like, push policy, and you're supposed to talk about government policy and such, but the GM's role is to make it so that they never, the other players, that is, never settle on a policy. So they never really say if it's good or bad. They just fight and debate about it. And there's a similar mechanic in Chokchon, but the setting behind it is all Joseon Dynasty, which is several hundred years ago in Korea. So there's this traditional backdrop, and what they're arguing about is cultural values and differences at that time in Korea. So it's pretty interesting. And then there's another one, which is very much just a D&D type clone, but it uses D6s because D20s and other dice like that, pretty much the only dice you could find in Korea up until recently were D6s, similar to Japan, I'm thinking. And like now you can import it, like Chessex and stuff. There are like dealers here in Korea that sell them, but this one came out in the 90s, and it's just based on D&D, so, except they made it so it was compatible with D6s. And that one was called La Condoria. And it's so old that not really, unfortunately, Koreans don't really play it or anything anymore. But those are the only Korean games I could find, like, have their roots in Korea.
I know that GURPS in Japan has source books that are released only in Japanese. They aren't available in English and so on. Do you know if there's such material in Korea as well? Source books developed specifically for the Korean market?
Unfortunately, that's not the case, actually. There's a small team that's translating the GURPS books, and they're the only ones that have the license, I believe. So it's more of just a translation project that's official. And they're actually pretty cheap. Like, when I found them in the store, they were only, like, in terms of American dollars, probably only, like, $17 or $18. I don't know what their normal GURPS book would be, but I found that a little bit surprising, and I found it odd that there wasn't other big names in the market, but GURPS is the only one that's available, like, legitimately, officially, as a book you can buy. But there are lots of fan translation projects, like, you could find for Lady Blackbird and Leverage, Ocean, Sea Dracula. These games have been translated into Korean or, like, via fan translations as well, and they're gaining some popularity as well.
I see a pattern of most of the games that you mentioned that have these fan translations are indie games or story games and so on. Do you know why? Is it just because they are small, or is there something in the story games that appeal to a Korean audience?
I think a main draw is there's been a couple Korean people in communities like story games. So they'll, like, take these games and bring it to a Korean forum or something and say, okay, everybody check this out. It's what's new and different and what's happening. And another reason I'm pretty sure is that these games are very concise, right? They're very small, so you can learn it in a couple pages and you can get right into it. There's usually, like, pre-generated characters that you can just jump right into and get going. And they only have to translate a couple pages, and you can play, right? One game that I was really surprised to see in Korea, because they're very conservative, like I said, so the RPG community is small, but I'm not sure, are you familiar with Sea Dracula?
I haven't played it, I know of it, yes.
It's a game that's basically, they want you to dance, or like do some, it's very physical. So I was very surprised to see that at a Korean translation. I haven't met a Korean who's actually played it yet, but I was surprised that it was actually translated and and well done. Like, it was, it looks, it's got the artwork and such, but you also notice a pattern, I think, that most of these games are free. So I think that's one of the main draws as well. So they can take the file and then translate it, and I think there wouldn't be a problem with it.
Is the Korean scene large enough to support a convention culture, or is it too small and spread out?
There are conventions, but it's mostly a part in a convention. So, like, every month there's a really big convention in Korea, an anime convention. Usually there will be, like, a small space set out for RPGs. Like, in Korea, they call tabletop RPGs TRPGs. There's also ORPGs, which is online RPGs, and CRPGs for computer RPGs. Like, they have all these acronyms and stuff. So there's usually, like, cordoned off areas for each of these areas. And Japanese culture and stuff is big over here, and we're so close to them. So a lot of people who get involved in RPGs are doing it because of Japanese RPGs that have made their way over, or even American RPGs inspired by Japanese ones, like, what's that one? Classroom Deathmatch or Anti-Explosion, like those ones. They're getting translated. They might be finished translating. And the Maid RPG, that one got translated as well. And then, like, the famous one from Japan, of course, like Sword World, that's been here forever. And there are some RPG magazines, too, especially online ones. A big one called RPG Zine, where they do reviews from all over the place, but mostly American ones, like Shock, Science Fiction, and other games like Endbreakers and Nova from Japan are getting bigger as well.
I'm sitting there, and it's awesome. In Korea, you can, even if they don't have a large domestic game-producing scene, there were a few games, as you mentioned, but they have imports from all over, Norwegian games, English language games, and Japanese games. And Japanese games have a really hard time to get out of Japan and onto the English language market. There are some, of course, made and a few more, but it's quite rare. And on this very, very small Korean scene, you still have an influx of Japanese games. I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's definitely very, like, Japanese games are very prevalent here, mostly because, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Korean or Japanese, but the languages are very similar. Like, it would be like me learning French, an English native speaker learning another Romance language or a Latin-based one. The same, even more so, grammar and syntax are the same. A lot of the vocabulary is exactly the same. They both use Chinese character-derived vocabulary for academic language. They're just so similar that many people who get interested in Japanese culture will get exposed to RPGs through that medium. So it's very interesting to see. And another thing that I haven't seen, but I've seen people talk about it actually on forums these days, are replays. And those are very popular in Korea too, because in the same way that Japanese people and Korean people are a little bit more conservative, at least in how they want other people to perceive them, they really like having an example of how to play, or pre-made characters, or what you should do in this game. Like, this is how a good session, or how you should play the game. If you want the best out of this game, this is how you would play it, that kind of example. And TRPGs are just so, it's just not a very big hobby, so a lot of people who want to get exposed to it, they'll be given, like, addresses to a website that will explain how to play tabletop RPGs, but with examples and pictures and, like, the whole thing, like a video even of some sessions, like, just so they know exactly what to do and what's expected of them in this environment and that kind of thing.
This is so awesome. I wish we had something like that here. I'm familiar with the concept of a replay, that is someone wrote down their games word for word and published that as books. You can go home and read a game session. But here, when I ask someone, how do I get into gaming? And they will say, come to our game and we will show you.
Yeah.
There's this opinion that in order to learn how to game, you have to learn from a gamer.
Yes.
But on the Korean, much smaller scene, they have provided the tools to learn by yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's another reason why ORPGs, like the playing an RPG via an online medium, is so... it's definitely much, much bigger than tabletop RPGs. Essentially, it is like tabletop RPGs, but they're played online, so they're called ORPGs. But... they're so popular because even if people are fragmented or they don't have time, like a lot of people I was surprised to find, like they got into RPGs a long time ago, like in the 80s and 90s when D&D was first heard about and they read about them in magazines or were exposed to them. They wanted to get into it, but they didn't really have other people to play with, and so they forgot about it. But now that RPGs are coming back and we have internet and we have map tools, like there's a whole bunch of programs and stuff that people can use. And there's a whole bunch of presets made for Koreans and tutorials for map tools. And in particular, map tools I've seen like all over the place. So just the fact that people are getting back into it and it's growing and there's translation projects, and it's very heartening, especially seeing... See Dracula, like I couldn't even imagine a group of Korean people sitting down to play.
Maybe it's just prejudice that's speaking here, but I think maybe they play it in a karaoke parlor or something like that, with friends involving some beer and so on. Could that happen?
In Canada and America, and I'm sure over there too, usually when you sit down for a game, you go to somebody's house and sit down and you'll have snacks and stuff like that. But in Korea, all of your family will be at home. Like, your extended family will be there. There's no space to game. You don't bring friends back to meet your parents or anything like that. In addition to space, they're very worried about how people perceive them and that kind of thing. So when I want to meet my friends or something, we'll go outside. So there's something called room culture in Korea, where basically they'll be like, if you want to karaoke or something, you go to a singing room. If you want to play a computer game, you go to a PC room. If you want to go play board games, you go to a board game cafe or a board game room. So everything is very... compartmentalized, I guess. So when I wanted to play an RPG, there are some places that are designed specifically for tabletop RPGs. Like, there'll be an RPG room or something. Or there will be RPGs available, or if you want, you can just go to a board game cafe, and instead of playing a board game, you just sit down and play. It's fine that way as well. Board game cafes are actually very popular in Korea, so you'll get some drinks or snacks, or the same way we do in Canada or America, but you do it outside in a place that you rent. So you'd pay like $2 or $3 per hour or something, and then get some drinks or whatever, and then you'd sit down, choose a board game and play that, or play an RPG. But most of the time, people will assume that you'd be playing a board game. And those have been translated, like, everything that you can think of for board games has been translated. All the big ones, like Dominion, to even really old ones, like Trivial Pursuit and all kinds of stuff. You can all get it here in Korea. It's all been translated. So board games are very popular, but RPGs are still... waiting for their day, I guess.
From what you're saying, it sounds like that day isn't very far off.
I really hope so, yeah. I think it's getting a lot better, and I think it will definitely open up soon, especially for conventions and stuff, because there's always a convention going on. Like I said, monthly, there's huge anime conventions, like Japanese stuff being sold, and there are RPGs there. So I think it's just a matter of time before that area just grows, and then with the advent of the online map tools and even on Kickstarter and stuff these days, I see D20 and a whole bunch of stuff and story games. They have a system online that you can play in your browser. So,
If we're talking about J Random Korean Gamer, would he be able to read and understand a game written in English? How good are people at English in Korea?
Well, Korea is definitely crazy for English, even more so than Japan, I'd say. These days, Koreans will put their kids into preschool, and they'll be taught English from 4 years old. So these days, especially the younger audience, the younger kids and stuff, they all speak English. In terms of grammar and such, right? It's still a very traditional method, so it's all grammar translation and very focused on classroom. It's not very content-based stuff yet, but all of them are quite good in terms of grammar and sentences and comprehension, reading. But they'll freeze up as soon as you start speaking English to them a lot. But I think it's safe to say, the younger the person you ask, the more fluent they will be. Or if you go to one of the more famous universities, there will be a lot of people on campus who are good at English, of course, too. Because Koreans view, in order to be successful academically or even in a job where you don't need English, there are still benefits. And most of the time, it's even a necessity to get a job to learn Korean, just because there's so much competition, so many people in such a small area. And in order to make yourself more attractive to find a job or to get into school or any such thing, you need English. So I think that's why there's so many fan translation projects. Even if there's less people in that hobby, all of them have a skill in English that they can use. I think the weak area, of course, is speaking, but that's to be said for any second language, really.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask if you used... do you use any props or anything in your game? Have you tried... I was very interested in the idea of having some physical objects at the table, because I found in games like D&D and stuff, which I started playing with D&D, and then once these other games came out, I found myself trying to tack on their systems onto D&D, Spirit of the Centuries aspects. I would have players write down three aspects on a card or something and put it in front of them, and we can kind of mix the systems that we want in with it. Or if there was a thief or something and he was picking a lock, and all the other players are fighting a monster or something, I would give him a physical puzzle or something, right? And then depending on his skill role in the game, I would give him a certain amount of time to figure out this puzzle while the other people are trying to fight and hold off the monsters while he's trying to get through the door or that kind of thing. And I found it really engaged a certain type of player. I can see some people not being interested in it. But have you ever tried anything like that in your game? I know you're developing a game which is card-based, is it entirely card-based?
The Daughters of Verona, yes, it's entirely card-based.
Do you find that there's a different reaction by the gamers if they have cards instead of with, say, just dice or something like that?
It depends. The Daughters Soverona, the card game, it is very, very rules light. There are no mechanisms for task resolution or conflict resolution. So you have to, if you want to do something, you have to say what you do and then do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that in traditional games, and you put these artifacts on the table, the character sheet, the dice, the pens, the erasers, people will look at the character sheet as a list of the things that they can do in the game. All right, I have a pick lock, sword fighting, and ride horse. All right, I want a horse so I can ride to the lock and do some fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts... it is both good because it provides a list of options, but it can hinder the game by becoming the list of options that what you can do.
Nothing outside of that.
Yeah. And in that way, I find that the Daughters of Verona is and other similar, very rules-light games are nice because people come in with no preconceptions of how to play. The artifacts in the environment don't limit them. When it comes to props, when we play the Japanese game Witch Quest...
I haven't actually heard of that game.
Okay, you're playing 13-year-old witches and their cats.
Okay. Oh, I think I may have heard of this game.
Yes.
Yes.
And when we play that, we have cat ear props for the cats, so they can look like just like cute kittens. And we have small wands for the witches, so they can wave them when they're casting spells. But beyond that, we don't use much props. I find that props usually distract the players. They will sit and play with the props, especially if you have guns or swords or stuff at the table. It really distracts from the game, even if it could be nice to have them on the table there, but it distracts a lot.
I can see that. I remember you mentioned, I think it was on the Mom's Basement podcast, you were saying that on TV you actually have LARPs, like a channel for LARPs?
No, not that. There's one children's program that comes back every year, which is called Barda. Well, they take some kids and they go LARPing and they make a show of that. But it's not a full channel of...
I found that interesting. Like in Korea too, like I guess quintessentially, like people all think, and it's true, that Korean people are very into online games like StarCraft and Guild Wars, Lineage, all that. So they actually do have channels dedicated to, if I wanted to watch and develop my StarCraft strategy, like there's a channel dedicated to StarCraft. So there's that. And then they have a channel for Paduk as well. Do you know the board game Go?
Yes.
Yeah, they have a channel developed that was developed and specifically for Go as well. So it's pretty interesting.
Do you think that would have anything to do with a will to learn by yourself before exposing your lack of knowledge to others? Like, if you want to learn how to game, you can go to these websites and they will show you how to game. If you want to learn Paduk, you can watch this program that shows you. If you want to learn English, you can watch the channel that only teaches English and so on.
I think so. I think... just the culture in general is very reserved. So, like, there are lots of places, and it's opening up more and more where you can find groups to that you organize and get stuff done together. But these channels have been around for at least 10 years. So, like, even before all that stuff, I think this was a way for people to build up their skills or learn the things they want to do in a way that's kind of still safe, right, in their home, and with no pressure. A lot of times you'll find that in Korea, a lot of Koreans can speak English, but they won't try. Like, just the fact that they might make a mistake or be viewed down upon, or other people in particular might see their mistake, leads to a lack of trying. But I think it, and it's seen a lot of growth, and it's something that I'm really looking forward to see. I'm kind of excited to be here, knowing that the scene is getting bigger, and I'll be able to see how it's developing and maybe even influence it if I can do some fan translations or maybe get in contact with some people in the States that I'd like to maybe enter the market or do a short foray into Korean, into the Korean market, or, you know, that kind of stuff. It's very exciting in that it's more of a start than in the middle.
It's great hearing about your game, The Magicians, and about the Korean gaming scene. I know so much more now than I did when we started. It was great having you on the show, and thanks for taking the time.
Well, it was definitely my pleasure. It's been fun talking about it, and even just getting prepared, or even if it was for a short time, and learning that some of the games that I thought were Korean were not Korean, in fact, was instructional for me too. So I've learned a lot, and continuing to do so every day in Korea, I think. So thanks for having me.
Thank you.